was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them
vote to strip away their freedom. Republic Truth Radio broadcast, the third presidential debate, live. Roll it!
Trump University, because his parents were Mexican. So it's not one thing. This is a pattern of divisiveness, of a very dark and in many ways dangerous vision of our country, where he incites violence, where he applauds people who are pushing and pulling and punching at his rallies. That is not who America is. And I hope that as we move
to this campaign,
and more people will understand what's at stake in this election. It really does come down to what kind of country we are going to have.
So sad when she talks about violence at my rallies, and she caused the violence. It's on tape.
The other things
are false, but honestly, I'd love to talk about getting rid of ISIS, and I'd love to talk about other things.
Okay.
But those other charges, as she knows, are false.
In this bucket about fitness to be president, there's been a lot of developments over the last 10 days since the last debate. I'd like to ask you about them. These are questions that the American people have. Secretary Clinton, during your 2009 Senate confirmation hearing, you promised to avoid even the appearance of a conflict of interest with your dealing with the Clinton Foundation while you were Secretary of State. But emails show that donors got special access to you. Those seeking grants for Haiti relief were considered separately from non-donors, and some of those donors got government contracts, taxpayer money. Can you really say that you kept your pledge to that Senate committee? And why isn't what happened and what went on between you and the Clinton Foundation, why isn't it what Mr. Trump calls pay to play?
Well, everything I did as Secretary of State was in furtherance of our country's interests and our values. The State Department has said that. I think that's been proven. But I am happy. In fact, I'm thrilled to talk about the Clinton Foundation because it is a world-renowned charity. And I am so proud of the work that it does. You know, I could talk for the rest of the debate. I know I don't have the time to do that. But just briefly, the Clinton Foundation made it possible for 11 million people around the world with HIV/AIDS to afford treatment. And that's about half of all the people in the world who are getting treatment. In partnership with the American Health Association, we have made environments and schools healthier for kids,
Secretary Clinton,
including healthier lunches.
Respectfully, this is an open discussion.
Well, it is an open discussion.
I understand, and the specific question went to pay for play. Do you want to talk about that?
But there is a lot of evidence about the very good work
and
the high ranking
that the
Clinton Foundation has gotten for their work.
Saudi Arabia giving $25 million, Qatar, all of these countries. You talk about women and women's rights. So these are people that push gays off business, off buildings. These are people that kill women and treat women horribly. And yet you take their money. So I'd like to ask you right now, why don't you give back the money that you've taken from certain countries that treat certain groups of people so horribly? Why don't you give back the money? I think it would be a great gesture.
Well,
because she takes a tremendous amount of money, and you take a look at the people of Haiti. I was at a little Haiti the other day in Florida, and I want to tell you, they hate the Clintons, because what's happened in Haiti with the Clinton Foundation is a disgrace. And you know it, and they know it, and everybody knows
it. Secretary
Clinton. Well, very quickly, we at the Clinton Foundation spend 90% of all the money that is donated on behalf of programs of people around the world and in our own country. I'm very proud of that. We have the highest rating from the watchdogs that follow foundations. And I'd be happy to compare what we do with the Trump Foundation, which took money from other people and bought a 6-foot portrait of Donald. I mean, who does that? It just was astonishing. But when it comes to Haiti, Haiti is the poorest country in our hemisphere. The earthquake and the hurricanes, it has devastated Haiti. Bill and I have been involved in trying to help Haiti for many years. The Clinton Foundation raised $30 million to help Haiti after the catastrophic earthquake and all of the terrible problems the people there had. We've done things to help small businesses, agriculture, and so much else. And we're going to keep working to help Haiti because it's an important part of the American experience.
They don't want you to help them anymore.
I'd
like to mention one thing.
Mike.
Trump Foundation, small foundation.
Mike, pause
People contribute. I contribute. The money goes 100%. 100% goes to different charities, including a lot of military. I don't get anything. I don't buy boats. I don't buy planes. What happened?
Folks, Clinton Foundation allegedly hacked, exposing thousands of donor databases. Pay-to-play folder. We're gonna send this link out right now. It's going out on Twitter and Facebook. You can check it out for yourself. While the hack of the Clinton Foundation was foreshadowed 2 months ago, notorious hacker Guccifer 2.0 previously was responsible for hacking the DNC and DNCC, not to mention the registration of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, announced at the moment many of you have been waiting for has come by revealing that the Clinton Foundation has been hacked. You know all about this at this point. Thousands of donors, Saudi Arabia, just like Donald was saying right here. This is the most disgusting liar I have ever seen. Ever run for president. Go ahead, roll the debate.
People contribute, I contribute. The money goes 100%, 100% goes to different charities, including a lot of military. I don't get anything. I don't buy boats. I don't buy planes. What happens
Wasn't some of the money used to settle your lawsuit, sir?
No, it was. We put up the American flag, and that's it. They put up the American flag. We fought for the right in Palm Beach to put up the American flag.
There was a penalty that was imposed by Palm Beach County.
The money came
from your foundation.
And by the way, the money went to Fisher House, where they build houses. The money that you're talking about went to Fisher House, where they build houses for veterans and disabled.
I want to get into one.
But
last...
of course, there's no way we can know whether any of that is true because he hasn't released his tax returns. He is the first candidate ever to run for president in the last 40 plus years who has not released his tax return. So everything he says about charity or anything else, we can't prove it. You can look at our tax returns. We've got them all out there. But what is really troubling is that we learned in the last debate he has not paid a penny in federal income tax. And we were talking about immigrants a few minutes ago, Chris. You know, half of all immigrants, undocumented immigrants in our country, actually pay federal income tax. So we have undocumented immigrants in America who are paying more federal income tax than a billionaire.
Let me just tell you, very simply, we're entitled, because of the laws that people like her pass, to take massive amounts of depreciation and other charges, and we do it. And all of her donors, just about all of them, I know Buffett took hundreds of millions of dollars, George Soros, took hundreds of millions of dollars. Let me just explain. Most of her donors
Mr. Trump,
have done the same thing as I did.
Okay.
And you know what she should have done?
Folks, we heard
and
this.
And you know, Hillary, what you should have done? You should have changed the law when you were a United States senator. Because your donors and your special interests are doing the same thing as I do, except even more so.
Well, you should have
changed the law, but you won't change the law because you take in so much money. I mean, I sat in my apartment today on a very beautiful hotel down the street, known as
Trump. Made with Chinese steel.
But I will tell you, I sat there watching ad after ad after ad, false ad, all paid for by your friends on Wall Street that gave so much money because they know you're going to protect them. And frankly, you should have changed the laws.
Trump,
if you don't like what I did, you should have changed the laws.
Mr. Trump, I want to ask you about one last question in this topic. You have been warning at rallies recently that this election is rigged and that Hillary Clinton is in the process of trying to steal it from you. Your running mate, Governor Pence, pledged on Sunday that he and you, his words, will absolutely accept the result of this election. Today, your daughter Ivanka said the same thing. I want to ask you here on the stage tonight, do you make the same commitment that you will absolutely, sir, that you will absolutely accept the result of this election?
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing The New York Times actually wrote an article about it, that they don't even care. It's so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters. But unfortunately for them, I think the voters are seeing through it. I think they're going to see through it. We'll find out on November 8th, but I think they're going to see through it.
But, sir, there's
If you look, excuse me, Chris, if you look at your voter rolls, you will see millions of people that are registered to vote. Millions. This isn't coming from me. This is coming from Pew Report and other places. Millions of people that are registered to vote that shouldn't be registered to vote. So let me just give you one other thing. So I talk about the corrupt media. I talk about the millions of people. Tell you one other thing. She shouldn't be allowed to run. She's guilty of a very, very serious crime. She should not be allowed to run. And just in that respect, I say it's rigged. Because she should never have been allowed to run for the presidency based on what she did with emails and so many other things.
But, sir, there is a tradition in this country. In fact, one of the prides of this country is the peaceful transition of power, and that no matter how hard fought a campaign is, that at the end of the campaign, that the loser concedes to the winner. Not saying that you're necessarily going to be the loser or the winner, but that the loser concedes to the winner, and that the country comes together in part for the good of the country. Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Well, okay? Chris, let me respond to that, because that's horrifying. You know, every time Donald thinks things are not going in his direction, he claims whatever it is rigged against him. The FBI conducted a year-long investigation into my emails. They concluded there was no case. He said the FBI was rigged. He lost the Iowa caucus. He lost the Wisconsin primary. He said the Republican primary was rigged against him. Then Trump University gets sued for fraud and racketeering. He claims the court system and the federal judge is rigged against him. There was even a time when he didn't get an Emmy for his TV program 3 years in a row, and he started tweeting that the Emmys were rigged against
him. Should have gotten it.
This is a mindset. This is how Donald thinks. And it's funny, but it's also really troubling.
Okay.
Now, that is not the way our democracy works. We've been around for 240 years. We've had free and fair elections. We've accepted the outcomes when we may not have liked them. And that is what must be expected of anyone standing on a debate stage during a general election. You know, President Obama said the other day, when you're whining before the game is even finished, it just shows you're not up to doing the job. And let's be clear about what he is saying and what that means. He is denigrating. He's talking down our democracy. And I, for one, am appalled that somebody who is the nominee of one of our two major parties would take that kind of position.
I think what the FBI did and what the Department of Justice did, including meeting with her husband, the Attorney General, in the back of an airplane on the tarmac in Arizona, I think it's disgraceful. I think it's a disgrace.
All right.
I think we've never had a situation so
bad. Hold on, folks. This doesn't do any good for anyone. Let's please continue the debate, and let's move on to the subject of foreign hotspots. The Iraqi offensive to take back Mosul has begun. If they are successful in pushing ISIS out of that city and out of all of Iraq, the question then becomes, what happens the day after? And that's something that whoever of you ends up as president is going to have to confront. Will you put U.S. troops into that vacuum to make sure that ISIS doesn't come back or isn't replaced by something even worse? Secretary Clinton, you go first in this segment. You have 2 minutes.
Well, I am encouraged that there is an effort led by the Iraqi army, supported by Kurdish forces, and also given the help and advice from the number of special forces and other Americans on the ground. But I will not support putting American soldiers into Iraq as an occupying force. I don't think that is in our interest, and I don't think that would be smart to do. In fact, Chris, I think that would be a big red flag waving for ISIS to reconstitute itself. The goal here is to take back Mosul. It's going to be a hard fight. I've got no illusions about that. And then continue to press into Syria to begin to take back and move on Raqqa, which is the ISIS headquarters. I am hopeful that the hard work that American military advisors have done will pay off, and that we will see a really successful military operation. But we know we've got lots of work to do. Syria will remain a hotbed of terrorism as long as the civil war, aided and abetted by the Iranians and the Russians, continue. So I have said, look, we need to keep our eye on ISIS. That's why I want to have an intelligence surge that protects us here at home, why we have to go after them from the air, on the ground, online, why we have to make sure here at home we don't let terrorists buy weapons. If you're too dangerous to fly, you're too dangerous to buy a gun. And I'm going to continue to push for a no-fly zone and safe havens within Syria, not only to help protect the Syrians and prevent the constant outflow of refugees, but to frankly gain some leverage on both the Syrian government and the Russians so that perhaps we can have the kind of serious negotiation necessary to bring the conflict to an end and go forward on a political track.
Mr. Trump, same question. If we are able to push ISIS out of Mosul and out of Iraq, would you be willing to put U.S. troops in there to prevent their return or something else?
Let me tell you, Mosul's so sad. We had Mosul. But when she left, when she took everybody out, we lost Mosul. Now we're fighting again to get Mosul. Problem with Mosul and what they wanted to do is they wanted to get the leaders of ISIS, who they felt were in Mosul. About 3 months ago, I started reading that they want to get the leaders, and they're going to attack also. Whatever happened to the element of surprise, okay? We announced we're going after Mosul. I've been reading about going after Mosul now for about, how long is it, Hillary, 3 months? These people have all left. They've all left. The element of surprise. Douglas MacArthur, George Patton, spinning in their graves when they see the stupidity of our country. So we're now fighting for Mosul that we had. All she had to do is stay there. Now we're going in to get it. But you know who the big winner in Mosul is going to be after we eventually get it? And the only reason they did it is because she's running for the office of president. And they want to look tough. They want to look good. He violated the red line in the sand. And he made so many mistakes, made all mistakes. That's why we have the great migration. But she wanted to look good for the election. So they're going in. But who's going to get Mosul, really? We'll take Mosul eventually. By the way, if you look at what's happening, much tougher than they thought. Much, much tougher, much more dangerous, going to be more deaths than they thought. But the leaders that we wanted to get are all gone because they're smart. You say, what do we need this for? So Mosul is going to be a wonderful thing, and Iran should write us a letter of thank you, just like the really stupid, the stupidest deal of all time, a deal that's going to give Iran absolutely nuclear weapons. Iran should write us yet another letter saying thank you very much. Because Iran, as I said many years ago, Iran is taking over Iraq, something they've wanted to do forever, but we've made it so easy for them. So we're now going to take Mosul, and you know who's going to be the beneficiary? Iran. Boy, are they making, I mean, they are outsmarting. Look, you're not there. You might be involved in that decision, but you were there when you took everybody out of Mosul and out of Iraq. You shouldn't have been in Iraq, but you did vote for it. You shouldn't have been in Iraq. But once you were in Iraq, you should have never left the way. The point is, the big winner is going to be Iran.
Well, you know, once again, Donald is implying that he didn't support the invasion of Iraq. I said it was a mistake. I've said that years ago. He has consistently denied what is a very clear fact that before the invasion, he supported it. And, you know, I just want everybody to go Google it. Google Donald Trump Iraq, and you will see the dozens of sources which verify that he was for the invasion of Iraq.
Wrong.
And you can actually hear the audio of him saying that. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters because he has not told the truth about that position. I guess he believes it makes him look better now, to contrast with me, because I did vote for it. But what's really important here is to understand all the interplay. Mosul is a Sunni city. Mosul is on the border of Syria. And yes, we do need to go after Baghdadi, and just like we went after bin Laden while you were doing Celebrity Apprentice, and we brought him to justice. We need to go after the leadership, but we need to get rid of them, get rid of their fighters. They're estimated several thousand fighters in Mosul. They've been digging underground. They've been prepared to defend. It's going to be tough fighting, but I think we can take back Mosul, and then we can move on into Syria and take back Raqqa. This is what we have to do. I'm just amazed that he seems to think that the Iraqi government and our allies and everybody else launched the attack on Mosul to help me in this election. But that's how Donald thinks, you know. He always looking for some
conspiracy. Chris, we don't gain anything.
He has all the
Iran is taking over Iraq.
Secretary Clinton.
Iran is taking over Iraq. We don't gain anything.
Secretary Clinton.
We would have gained if they did it by surprise.
Wait. Secretary Clinton, it's an open discussion.
We would have gained if they did it by surprise.
Secretary, please let Mr. Trump speak.
He's unfit, and he proves it every time.
You are the one that's unfit. You know, WikiLeaks just actually came out. John Podesta said some horrible things about you, and boy, was he right. He said some beauties. And you know, Bernie Sanders, he said you have bad judgment. You do. And if you think that going into Mosul, after we let the world know we're going in, and all of the people that we really wanted, the leaders, they're all gone. If you think that was good, then you do. Now, John Podesta said you have terrible instincts. Bernie Sanders said you have bad judgment. I agree with both.
Well, you should ask Bernie Sanders who he's supporting for president. And he has said, campaigned for me around the country, you are the most dangerous person to run for president in the modern history of America. I think he's right.
Look who's talking.
Turn to Aleppo.
The Teflon Don.
You were both asked about the situation in the Syrian city of Aleppo. And I want to follow up on that because you said several things in that debate which were not true, sir. You said that Aleppo has basically fallen. In fact,
it's a catastrophe. Have you seen it? Have you seen it?
Sir,
have you seen what's happened to Aleppo?
If I might finish my question.
Okay, so it hasn't fallen. Take a look at it.
Well, there are 250,000 people still living there and being slaughtered.
That's right.
And
they are being slaughtered because of bad decisions.
What do you call it? I call that falling. What if that was happening in an American city?
You also said that ISIS, that Syria and Russia are busy fighting ISIS. In fact, they have been the ones who've been bombing and shelling eastern Aleppo, and they just announced a humanitarian pause, in effect admitting that they have been bombing and shelling Aleppo. Would you like to clear that up, sir?
Well, Aleppo is a disaster. It's a humanitarian nightmare, but it has fallen from any standpoint. I mean, what do you need, a signed document? Take a look at Aleppo. It is so sad when you see what's happened. And a lot of this is because of Hillary Clinton, because what's happened is by fighting Assad, who turned out to be a lot tougher than she thought, and now she's going to say, oh, he loves Assad. He's just much tougher and much smarter than her and Obama. And everyone thought he was gone 2 years ago, 3 years ago. He aligned with Russia. He now also aligned with Iran, who we made very powerful. We gave them $150 billion back. We give them $1.7 billion in cash. I mean cash, bundles of cash as big as this stage. We gave them $1.7 billion. Now, they have aligned. He has aligned with Russia and with Iran. They don't want ISIS, but they have other things because we're backing rebels. We don't know who the rebels are. We're giving them lots of money, lots of everything. We don't know who the rebels are. And when and if, and it's not going to happen because you have Russia and you have Iran now, but if they ever did overthrow Assad, you might end up with as bad as Assad is. And he's a bad guy. But you may very well end up with worse than Assad. If she did nothing, we'd be in much better shape. And this is what's caused the Great Migration, where she's taken in tens of thousands of Syrian refugees who probably, in many cases, not probably, who are definitely, in many cases, ISIS-aligned. And we now have them in our country. And wait till you see, this is going to be the great Trojan horse. And wait till you see what happens in the coming years. Lots of luck, Hillary. Thanks a lot for doing a great job.
Secretary Clinton, you have talked about, and in the last debate and again today, that you would impose a no-fly zone to try to protect the people of Aleppo and to stop the killing there. President Obama has refused to do that because he fears it's going to draw us closer or deeper into the conflict. And General Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says, you impose a no-fly zone, chances are you're going to get into a war, his words, with Syria and Russia. So the question I have is, if you impose a no-fly zone, first of all, how do you respond to their concerns? Secondly, if you impose a no-fly zone and a Russian plane violates that, does President Clinton shoot that plane down?
Well, Chris, first of all, I think a no-fly zone could save lives and could hasten the end of the conflict. I am well aware of the really legitimate concerns that you have expressed from both the president and the general. This would not be done just on the first day. This would take a lot of negotiation. It would also take making it clear to the Russians and the Syrians that our purpose here was to provide safe zones on the ground. We've had millions of people leave Syria, and those millions of people inside Syria who've been dislocated. So I think we could strike a deal and make it very clear to the Russians and the Syrians that this was something that we believe was in the best interests of the people on the ground in Syria. It would help us with our fight against ISIS. But I want to respond to what Donald said about refugees. He's made these claims repeatedly. I am not going to let anyone into this country who is not vetted, who we do not have confidence in, but I am not going to slam the door on women and children. That picture of that little four-year-old boy in Aleppo with the blood coming down his face while he sat in an ambulance is haunting. And so we are going to do very careful, thorough vetting. That does not solve our internal challenges with ISIS and our need to stop radicalization, to work with American Muslim communities who are on the front lines to identify and prevent attacks. In fact, the killer of the dozens of people at the nightclub in Orlando, the Pulse nightclub, was born in Queens, the same place Donald was born. So let's be clear about what the threat is and how we are best going to be able to meet it.
Yeah, and he was born in Queens, just like Donald
from over
was.
In Syria
Evil
and Iraq,
Queens.
And we've got to keep fighting, and I will defeat ISIS, and some of it is we have to up our game and be much smarter here.
Folks,
at home.
I want to get into our final segment.
But I just have to, it's so
quick.
Ridiculous what you, she will defeat ISIS. We should have never let ISIS happen in the first place. And right now they're in 32 countries.
Okay.
You should have never. Wait one second. They had a ceasefire 3 weeks ago. A ceasefire, United States, Russia, Syria. And during the ceasefire, Russia took over vast swatches of land. And then they said, we don't want the ceasefire anymore. We are so outplayed on missiles, on ceasefires. They are outplayed. Now, she wasn't there. I assume she had nothing to do with it. But our country is so outplayed by Putin and Assad and, by the way, and by Iran. Nobody can believe how stupid our leadership is.
Mr. Trump, Secretary Clinton, no, we need to move on to our final segment, and that is the national debt, which has not been discussed until tonight. Our national debt as a share of the economy, our GDP, is now 77%. That's the highest since just after World War II. But the nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget says, Secretary Clinton, under your plan, debt would rise to 86% of GDP over the next 10 years. Mr. Trump, under your plan, they say it would rise to 105% of GDP over the next 10 years. Question is, why are both of you ignoring this problem? Mr. Trump, you go first.
Well, I say they're wrong because I'm going to create tremendous jobs. And we're bringing GDP from really 1%, which is what it is now. And if she got in, it'll be less than zero. But we're bringing it from 1% up to 4%. And I actually think we can go higher than 4%. I think you can go to 5 or 6%. And if we do, you don't have to bother asking your question because we have a tremendous machine. We will have created a tremendous economic machine once again. To do that, we're taking back jobs. We're not going to let our companies be raided by other countries where we lose all our jobs. We don't make our product anymore. It's very sad. But I'm going to create the kind of a country that we were from the standpoint of industry. We used to be there. We've given it up. We've become very, very sloppy. We've had people that are political hacks making the biggest deals in the world, bigger than companies. You take these big companies, these trade deals are far bigger than these companies. And yet we don't use our great leaders, many of whom back me and many of whom back Hillary, I must say. But we don't use those people. Those are the people. These are the greatest negotiators in the world. We have the greatest business people in the world. We have to use them to negotiate our trade deals. We use political hacks. We use people that get the position because they made a campaign contribution. And they're dealing with China and people that are very much smarter than they are. So we have to use our great people. But with that being said, we will create an economic machine the likes of which we haven't seen in many decades. And people, Chris, will again go back to work, and they'll make a lot of money, and we'll have companies that will grow and expand and start from new.
Secretary Clinton.
Well, first, when I hear Donald talk like that and know that his slogan is Make America Great Again, I wonder when he thought America was great. And before he rushes and says, you know, before you and President Obama were there, I think it's important to recognize that he has been criticizing our government for decades. You know, back in 1987, he took out a $100,000 ad in the New York Times during the time when President Reagan was president and basically said exactly what he just said now, that we were the laughing stock of the world. He was criticizing President Reagan. This is the way Donald thinks about himself, puts himself into, you know, the middle and says, you know, I alone can fix it, as he said on the convention stage. But if you look at the debt, which is the issue you asked about, Chris, I pay for everything I'm proposing. I do not add a penny to the national debt. I take that very seriously because I do think it's one of the issues we've got to come to grips with. So when I talk about how we're going to pay for education, how we're going to invest in infrastructure, how we're going to get the cost of prescription drugs down, and a lot of the other issues that people talk to me about all the time, I've made it very clear we are going where the money is. We are going to ask the wealthy and corporations to pay their fair share.
Oh, you go where the money is, all right there, honey.
That will slow down or diminish our growth. In fact, I think just the opposite. We'll have what economists call middle-out growth. We've got to get back to rebuilding the middle class, the families of America. That's where growth will come from. That's why I want to invest in you. I want to invest in your family. And I think that's the smartest way to grow the economy, to make the economy fairer. And we just have a big disagreement about this. It may be because of our experiences. You know, he started off with his dad as a millionaire. I started off with my dad as a small businessman.
We've heard this before.
I think it's, you know, it's a difference that affects how we see the world and what we want to do with the economy.
Time.
Thank you, Hillary. Could I just respond?
Well, no.
Because I disagree with Ronald Reagan very strongly on trade. I disagreed with him. We should have been much tougher on trade even then. I've been waiting for years. Nobody does it right. And frankly, now we're going to do it right.
All right. The one last area I want to get into with you in this debate is the fact that the biggest driver of our debt is entitlements, which is 60% of all federal spending. Now, the Committee for Federal Budget has looked at both of your plans, and they say neither of you has a serious plan that is going to solve the fact that Medicare is going to run out of money in the 2020s, Social Security is going to run out of money in the 2030s, and at that time, recipients are going to take huge cuts in their benefits. So, in effect, the final question I want to ask you in this regard is, and let me start with you, Mr. Trump, would President Trump make a deal to save Medicare and Social Security that included both tax increases and benefit cuts, in effect, a grand bargain on entitlements?
I'm cutting taxes. We're going to grow the economy. It's going to grow at a record rate.
But that's not going to help on entitlements.
It's going to totally help you. And one thing we have to do, repeal and replace the disaster known as Obamacare. It's destroying our country. It's destroying our businesses, our small business, and our big businesses. We have to repeal and replace Obamacare. You take a look at the kind of numbers that will cost us in the year 17. It is a disaster if we don't repeal and replace. Now, it's probably going to die of its own weight, but Obamacare has to go. It's the premiums are going up 60, 70, 80%. Next year, they're going to go up over 100%. And I'm really glad that the premiums have started. At least the people see what's happening, because she wants to keep Obamacare and she wants to make it even worse. And it can't get any worse. Bad health care at the most expensive price. We have to repeal and replace Obamacare.
And Secretary Clinton, Same question, because at this point, Social Security and Medicare are going to run out. The trust funds are going to run out of money. Will you, as president, entertain, will you consider a grand bargain, a deal that includes both tax increases and benefit cuts to try to save both programs?
Well, Chris, I am on record as saying that we need to put more money into the Social Security Trust Fund. That's part of my commitment to raise taxes on the wealthy. My Social Security payroll contribution will go up, as will Donald's, assuming he can't figure out how to get out of it. But what we want to do is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund by making sure that we have sufficient resources. And that will come from either raising the cap and or finding other ways to get more money into it. I will not cut benefits. I want to enhance benefits for low-income workers and for women who have been disadvantaged by the current Social Security system. But what Donald is proposing with these massive tax cuts will result in a $20 trillion additional national debt. That will have dire consequences for Social Security and Medicare. And I'll say something about the Affordable Care Act, which he wants to repeal. The Affordable Care Act extended the solvency of the Medicare Trust Fund. So if he repeals it, our Medicare problem gets worse. What we need to do is go after the long-term health care drivers. We've got to get costs down, increase value, emphasize wellness. I have a plan for doing that, and I think that we will be able to get entitlement spending under control with more resources and smarter decisions.
This is the final time, probably to both of your delight, that you're going to be on the stage together in this campaign. I would like to end it on a positive note. You had not agreed to closing statements, but it seems to me in a funny way that might make it more interesting because you haven't prepared closing statements. So I'd like you each to take it. We're going to put a clock up, a minute, as the final question in the final debate to tell the American people why they should elect you to be the next president. This is another new mini segment. Secretary Clinton, it's your turn to go first.
Well, I would like to say to everyone watching tonight that I'm reaching out to all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, because we need everybody to help make our country what it should be, to grow the economy, to make it fairer, to make it work for everyone. We need your talents, your skills, your commitment, your energy, your ambition. You know, I've been privileged to see the presidency up close. And I know the awesome responsibility of protecting our country and the incredible opportunity of working to try to make life better for all of you. I have made the cause of children and families really my life's work. That's what my mission will be in the presidency. I will stand up for families against powerful interests, against corporations. I will do everything that I can to make sure that you have good jobs with rising incomes, that your kids have good educations from preschool through college. I hope you will give me a chance to serve as your president.
Secretary Clinton, thank you. Mr. Trump?
She's raising the money from the people she wants to control. Doesn't work that way. But when I started this campaign, I started it very strongly. It's called Make America Great Again. We're going to make America great. We have a depleted military. It has to be helped, has to be fixed. We have the greatest people on earth in our military. We don't take care of our veterans. We take care of illegal immigrants, people that come into the country illegally better than we take care of our vets. That can't happen. Our policemen and women are disrespected. We need law and order, but we need justice too. Our inner cities are a disaster. You get shot walking to the store. They have no education. They have no jobs. I will do more for African Americans and Latinos than she can ever do in 10 lifetimes. All she's done is talk to the African Americans and to the Latinos. But they get the vote, and then they come back. They say, we'll see you in 4 years. We are going to make America strong again, and we are going to make America great again, and it has to start now. We cannot take 4 more years of Barack Obama, and that's what you get when you get her.
Thank you both. Secretary Clinton, hold on just a moment, folks. Secretary Clinton, Mr. Trump, I want to thank you both for participating in all three of these debates. That brings to an end this year's debate sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates. We want to thank the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and its students for having us. Now the decision is up to you. While millions have already voted, Election Day, November 8th, is just 20 days away.
Okay, all right, all right. Well, folks, where do we start with that rigmarole? Welcome to the show, John. I'm your host, Tom Lacavara Stewart, and you are now with John O'Mesmer as well. We who are just listening to the debate live, and it was very interesting, to say the least. This time, at least, we saw some punches from Donald about the emails. That was good to see. I just sent over a link to you, Mike. Pull that, the latest one up that I just sent over to you. Let me know when it's ready. I think that Donald, he's been called a liar by Hillary so many times, but he did absolutely hit the nail right on the head when he brought up their responsibility of inciting violence. Everyone has got to have heard and seen about that by now. You know, WikiLeaks, the gift that keeps on giving, huh, John?
I almost have a... Well, I can't say that on the air. I like Julian Assange right now. Hillary cannot escape what's coming out in these emails. It's just one thing after another. And what the beauty of it is that these emails are confirming everything... everything we've been saying about her, and confirming exactly who she is and what a absolutely wretched human being she is. And the DNC is just totally behind the all the violence at the Trump rallies, and then she continues to try to blame every piece of us. She tried to blame the firebombs of the Republican headquarters in, I can't remember what town it was, but on Trump. You know, it's like, you got to be kidding me. There's nothing she won't blame on him. But at least it was good to see him firing back tonight, and, but it's still game board B, as I'm now referring to. You know, game board A was our original Republic published, and, they switched us over to game board B. And that's what this is all playing on, game board B. And we need to get back on game board A.
Well, I agree there. We're going to be sharing with you momentarily Project Veritas on the voters, the rigging of the election. Go with clip one of Veritas Project.
It doesn't matter what the freaking legal and ethics people say. We need to win this motherfucker.
Hillary, is aware of all the work that you guys do, I hope.
The campaign is fully in.
And then they tell Hillary, what's going on.
Well, Hillary knows through chain of command.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting we wait around. We need to start this shit right away.
Okay.
On every one of these fronts.
Okay.
What I call it is conflict engagement.
That's your version of re-enfranchisement.
Conflict engagement in the lines at Trump rallies.
This is part one of our undercover investigation into the dark, backroom dealings of the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign. The culmination of a year-long investigation infiltrating the machine from the bottom all the way to the White House. There are concerns this election will be rigged. What you're about to see will make you uncomfortable and angry. It's graphic, uncensored, and disturbing. Our attorneys say there is strong evidence of criminality, and this is just part one.
A lot of pre-union guys, they'll do whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You want. And they're rock and roll.
So I'm basically deputy rapid response director for the DNC for all things Trump on the ground. Nobody's really supposed to know about me.
You know what I'm saying? We have mentally ill people who we pay to do shit. Make no mistake.
This guy named Cesar Vargas is his name.
I got a priest to cry on camera once.
So Bob is really good friends with him, and talked to him this afternoon, and they are all in. If we can get $25,000, they're all in.
There is a narrative that supporters at Trump rallies are violent and dangerous, looking to beat up protesters who don't agree with them. But our undercover investigation into the Hillary Clinton Democratic Party machine reveals a very different story.
If you're there and you're protesting and you do these actions, you will be attacked at Trump rallies. That's what we know.
So that's part of the process of eliciting the reaction.
The whole point of it is we know that Trump's people will freak the fuck out. His security team will freak out, and his supporters will lose their shit.
This is Scott Fogel. He is the National Field Director for Americans United for Change. He used to work for People for the American Way, an organization funded by George Soros. He also has his own company called the Fogel Group. He is one of the dark operatives for the Clinton campaign.
We were contracted directly with the DNC and the campaign, both.
Yeah.
I am contracted to him, but I answer to the head of special events for the DNC and the head of the special events and political for the campaign.
The campaign pays DNC, DNC pays Democracy Partners pays the Fogel Group goes and executes the shit on the ground.
Democracy Partners is a private political consulting company with deep ties to Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama's White House, and the Democratic National Committee.
We are the primary mechanism as a team. Democracy Partners is the tip of the spear.
Wherever Trump and Pence are going to be, we have a bench.
Okay.
And we have a whole team across the country that does that, both consultants and people from the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party apparatus and people from the campaign, the Clinton campaign. My role with the campaign is to manage all that.
Bob Cremer is Democracy Partners. He is the husband of Jan Schakowsky, a Democratic congresswoman from Chicago, and in 2005, he pled guilty to tax violations and bank fraud. He was convicted and sentenced to 5 months in prison and 11 months of house arrest. He founded Democracy Partners in 2011.
Just for a little orientation, Democracy Partners is kind of a group practice of a variety of consultants that do essentially a wide variety of different kinds of political consulting.
I work with Bob Cremer one-to-one all the time. I'm the white hat. Democracy Partners is kind of the white hat. Bob Cremer is diabolical, and I love him for it.
Yeah.
This investigation has revealed compelling evidence of a dark money conspiracy, a violation of federal campaign coordination laws between Hillary Clinton's campaign, Priorities USA, Hillary's super PAC, and the Democratic National Committee.
We have a clip deliverable that we have to deliver every day for our groups of clients who are involved in these projects. AUFC, A4C, which is Alliance for Change, Alliance for Retired Americans, which is part of AFL-CIO. They're one of our partners on the AUFC stuff for social security. Depends on the issue. And then there's the DNC and the campaigns and priorities. Priorities is a big part of this too. The campaigns and DNC cannot coordinate with priorities, but I guarantee to you that the people who run the super PACs all talk to each other, and me and a few other people are the hubs of that communication.
Like, so you're kind of like intermediaries between the super PACs and the DNC. But they can't, the DNC, they can't talk to each other. Okay. But you guys are kind of like...
We're consultants, so we're not the official entity. And so those conversations can be had between consultants who are working for different parts. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why there's Bob, who's the primary there, and I'm a sub to him, and I'm also primary to AUFC separately. That's why.
So there's like a Morse code between the DNC and the super PACs.
It's less of a Morse code than it is a text conversation that never ends. It's like that. It's kind of like an ongoing Pony Express.
Okay, so, I mean, that's...
It's not as efficient as it could be, but that's because the law doesn't allow it to be.
The thing that we have to watch is making sure there's a double blind between the actual campaign and the actual DNC and what we're doing. There's a double blind there. So that they can plausibly deny that they knew anything about it.
Scott Fogel is Cremer's attack dog. Fovell and his people train the agitators to go to Trump rallies, and nothing is left to chance.
There's a script.
Oh, there is a script.
There's a script.
Okay.
There's a script of engagement. Sometimes the crazies bite, and sometimes the crazies don't bite. They're starting confrontations in the line, right? They're not starting confrontations in the rally, because once they're inside the rally, they're under Secret Service's control. When they're outside the rally...
Mm-hmm. They're more affected out. They're harder to get in.
The media will cover it no matter where it happens.
I assume it's always in the rally.
Initiating the conflict by having leading conversations with people who are naturally psychotic.
Right.
Okay, I mean, honestly, it is not hard to get some of these assholes to pop off.
Right.
It's a matter of showing up to want to get into the rally in a Planned Parenthood t-shirt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Trump is a Nazi. You know, you can message to draw them out and draw them to punch you.
Fovell boasts about the extent of his network of operatives.
So here, you have a schedule of events.
Mm-hmm.
We update this on an ongoing, rolling basis every morning.
Mm-hmm. Those are all the Trump appearances.
These are all the Trump and Pence appearances. Tomorrow, for instance, we are turning out 500 people in front of the Trump International in D.C. We have to have people prepared to go wherever these events are, which means we have to have a central kind of agitator training.
Yep.
Now, we have a built-in group of people in New York who do this.
Okay.
We have a built-in group of people in D.C. who do this.
I was going to say, are they localized?
We have a group
central
of people in Vegas. We have a group of people
training.
In Colorado. We have a group of people in Minneapolis.
So I'm basically deputy rapid response director for the DNC for all things Trump on the ground.
This guy is Aaron Black. He works full-time for Cramer at Democracy Partners. He directs the spontaneous protests at Trump and Pence events. His real name is actually Aaron Minter. We don't know why he uses the name Black.
Nobody's really supposed to know about me. So the Chicago protest, when they shut all that was us. It was more him than me, but none of this is supposed to come back to us. Because we want it coming from people. We don't want it to come from the party. So if we do a protest and it's DNC protest, it's right away the press is going to say partisan. But if I'm in there coordinating with all the groups on the ground and sort of playing field general, but they're the ones talking to the cameras, then it's actually people. But if we send out press advisories with DNC on them and Clinton campaign, it doesn't have the same effect.
We have to be really careful because what we don't need is for it to show up on CNN that the DNC paid for X people to... That's not going to happen.
So, C and I did the Chicago Trump event, but we shut down the light bulbs. Yeah.
Zulema Rodriguez and Aaron Black are bragging about a protest last March that turned extremely violent and led the Trump campaign to cancel a huge rally. Fights broke out between protesters and Trump supporters, and two Chicago police officers were injured. Based on our reporting, the event was not spontaneous.
We have a call with the campaign every day to go over the focuses that need to be undertaken.
I just had a call with the campaign and the DNC. Every day.
We met her at the Republican convention in Cleveland in July. This Clinton dark machine is also prepared for the fallout from the violence they foment at the Trump rallies and other demonstrations.
Because the one thing I'm never going to do is have some kid get punched out at a rally and then not have his doctor bill and his legal bill, if he gets arrested, pay for it.
Ultimately, the whole endeavor is to get negative press of Trump and his supporters in local and national media.
It's something that Bob and I obsess about. Is we're not going to go to an effort to just do an event and not have anybody show up or not have it covered. We have to get coverage.
These guys have been doing their dirty tricks for some time, even before Trump won the nomination.
So I probably know your work.
I know you do. Everybody knows. But
Was the, you mean like a situation where it's sort of like a...
Remember the Iowa State Fair thing where Scott Walker grabbed the sign out of the dude's hand?
Uh-huh.
And then the dude gets kind of roughed up right in front of the stage, right?
Yeah.
On camera?
Yeah.
That was all us. The guy who got roughed up is my counterpart who works for Bob.
And that was like storyboarded, that him getting roughed up or whatever?
Scenario.
Uh-huh. And you like lent yourself to that situation and it happened.
We not only
it was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
We planted multiple people in that front area around him and in the back to make sure there wasn't just a action that happened up front. There was also a reaction that happened out back.
Front and back.
Remember this woman? Her name is Shirley Teeter. She is a 69-year-old sufferer of COPD. According to numerous news stories at the time, she was assaulted at a Trump rally in North Carolina by Trump supporter Richard Campbell. The media played her story across the country for days.
She was one of our activists.
She was one of your activists
who had been trained up to bird dogs.
Yes.
So the term bird dogging, you put people in the line. Mm-hmm. At the front, which means they have to get there at 6 o'clock in the morning, so they're getting the front of the rally, so that when Trump comes down the rope line, they're the ones asking him the question in front of the reporters because they're pre-placed there. To funnel that kind of operation, you have to start back with people 2 weeks ahead of time and train them how to ask questions.
Right.
You have to train them to bird dog.
No, I'm saying, we have mentally ill people that we pay to do shit. Make no mistake. Over the last 20 years, I've paid off a few homeless guys to do some crazy stuff. And I've also taken them for dinner, and I've also made sure they had a hotel and a shower, and I've put them in a program. Mm-hmm. Like, I've done that. But the reality is, a lot of, especially in our union guys... A lot of free union guys, they'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
They're rock and roll.
When
I need to get something done in Arkansas,
right.
The first guy I call is the head of the AFL-CIO down there.
Uh-huh.
Because he will say, what do you need? And I will say, I need a guy who will do this and this. And they find that guy. And that guy will be like, yeah, hell, let's do it.
Bird dogging. It's a word we had not heard until we got into this investigation. But when we checked the WikiLeaks Clinton emails, we found references to the term in emails to and from the campaign. This is a chain where Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook suggests it might be a tactic to employ to shore up support with Hispanic voters. After our report, they may also need some help with the people in Iowa and Wisconsin.
So I have to be really honest. Iowa is a difficult case because it's a 50-50 state, and honestly, half the state is racist as fuck. I came home last night and really just, I was upset because that's not the way I was raised, and that's not the Iowa that I grew up in, but you kind of have to accept that that's the way it is. Now,
it's not who you are, but that's what the state is.
Right. Wisconsin is just as bad.
Okay.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
Corruption. As you can see, it's alive and well in our country, and you're paying for it. As we continue to release more videos, you must hold the mainstream media to account to further investigate what we've uncovered. America, our war is here. We must decide if we're going to save this country or lose it. To quote Abraham Lincoln, America will never be destroyed from the outside. If we falter or lose our freedoms, it will be because we destroyed ourselves.
I think that means we're going to break, folks.
That's going to break. We'll be right back.
I'm listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.